You know, the usual joke is anyone that can't hear me, please raise your hand. Okay, so what I plan to do in this session and tomorrow's last session is first to start with a review of the main ideas that I discussed during this week. And that will be for the benefit first of the people that were not here, and also for the people that were here, I'm sure that review will bring out the main important ideas that I try to to introduce. And when I finish this review, I will devote the rest of the time today and also tomorrow to a description of a number of exciting new effects and new phenomena that is revealed by this new approach to quantum mechanics that uses the concept of weak measurements, weak value, and the two vector formulation. So first of all, the review. I started by saying that when we have a physical theory, it's very important not only to have the mathematical formalism, but to have also a story that we know how to tell that describes intuitively what are the main features of the theory. And the importance of that story is that it allows us, first of all, to find which are the interesting questions to ask the theory, because mathematical theory can give answer, if it's the theory of everything, can give answer to infinite number of questions. Once we formulate the question, and the mathematics, if we know how to solve it, we'll be able to solve the what's happening, but we have to know which interesting questions to ask. Also, the mathematical theory can describe very, very complicated situations that's very difficult to solve in principle, and therefore it is nice to have general ideas of what's going on, because that can give us intuition of what more or less could happen in complicated systems. I think a beautiful example of knowing how to tell a nice story about classical physics is the example of thermodynamics. When we have very macroscopic systems, if we have the right story about it, then we can develop new concepts of what happens in this very complicated situation, and the concepts are the pressure and entropy in particular. These are examples where we could develop, through intuition of what is happening, a completely interesting approach to very complicated situations. So, we know that at the beginning of last century, there were two revolutions in physics. Relativity, I will talk about special relativity, and quantum mechanics. And this revolution uncovered very exciting new phenomena of nature when you switch the velocity of light from infinite to a finite value, and the thing that we call now Planck constant from zero to something finite. When Planck constant is zero and the velocity of light is infinite, we just have classical physics. If we only reduce the velocity of light to a finite value and not touch h yet, assuming that h is still zero, then we have classical special relativity. And for this, Einstein was able to come with a beautiful story that depends just on two fundamental ideas. One, that the description of physics should be the same in all inertial frames. And second, that the velocity of light is finite in all such frames. And just based on this very simple, very straightforward two concepts, Einstein was able to come out with this beautiful set of thought experiments that are bringing out what is really the main new features of this theory. And everybody that goes through this sort of experiment can develop something that is feels a good intuition about relativity, special relativity. And after he does that, he will never be surprised anymore by some other features of special relativity discovered in the mathematics, because he would immediately understand intuitively why this situation happens. Now, The other evolution is quantum mechanics, and there we discuss what happens if we make the Planck constant finite. And as I will show you, it's very important to realize that if we are going to talk about quantum theory for a definite number of particles, we just try to think what it tells us new about a particle, we have to be very careful not to, at the same time, try to go to switch on, try to reduce the velocity of light to a finite number. Because in that case, we will never have a good theory for a definite number of particles. If we try to say that we have both H finite and C finite, then there is no meaning anymore to take a particle, quantum particle, and assume that we can localize it at all. Because the minute when we try to localize it, we immediately run into the probability of having the possibility of creating pairs, and the whole concept of definite number of particles is not safe. We have to, if we want to think carefully about quantum theory with the velocity of light finite, we must go to field theory. So if we want to be safe and to think about a good story about quantum particles, we should rather think about H being finite, but C still being infinite. So in principle, we are going to talk about non-relativistic quantum mechanics, assuming that we are discussing here the Galilean space-time. We have absolute time and we have three-dimensional space, and we don't want to involve Lorentz transformation there, because usually people say if you're talking about particles move slowly, you can forget about the thing, but that's not true, because even when the particles are moving slowly, if we think about quantum mechanics in Lorentz frames, we run into a lot of difficulties. So I'm now trying to think about what would be the correct story to tell about quantum mechanics when the velocity of light is infinite. We have the classical notion of space-time, and H is finite. And the historical fact is that up to now, the situation in the case of quantum mechanics is very, very different than of classical physics when we switch on the velocity of light to finite one. It's an experimental fact, a social experimental fact, that if you try to ask any physicist, do you really understand quantum mechanics, he will give you one of two answers. Either you will say, yes, I understand it fully, but when he tries to find out what he means by saying that he understands it fully, is that he has a very good intuition about how to solve the mathematical problem. But when you try to push him further and to ask, what do you mean really by your physical story? What do you mean by saying that a particle can be at the same time in two different locations? He will run into the same problem that Feynman says that he is sure that no one ever will understand quantum mechanics. But this really means people will be able to solve the mathematical problems, will be able to develop real intuition about it, but they would not really, really know intuitively what it means for a particle to be at the same time at two different locations. Because if the particle, like electron, has mass and charge, we can understand being at the same time at two different locations one of two ways. Either we say the particle is really always just at one place, and the wave function tells us what is the probability to find the particle there. There is no problem with that, but that will not explain what's happening, because when we look at the two-slit experiment, what's going to the two slits is not probabilities that the particle will go through one or the particle will go through the other, it's this new notion of amplitude. And the minute we say, we have an amplitude moving in space, we don't understand what it means. If you really think carefully, there is no way to understand what it means, because we are not planning to say that the charge and the mass are spread according to this amplitude. This was the beginning when Schrödinger developed first the quantum mechanics, and he was very happy to find solutions of wave packets that don't spread, because if you look at the harmonic oscillator, you say, I believe the theory about this wave packet mean is that instead of having a particle as a point particle, which anyhow was inconsistent even in classical physics because of the infinities of the self-energy, he said, I will think about the particle as a small object that really is spreading space inside this region of the wave packet. The charge and the mass are spread there, and then there is no problem in understanding what's going on. But people, when people try to follow that, very probably the early days, they immediately realize that this is not true in general, and this wave packet begins to spread in time, and pretty soon it covers a very big region of space-time. And then what is the meaning of that? What is the meaning of this amplitude? I think Feynman was very honest in saying that he doesn't believe that he understands it, and Feynman was sufficiently proud that he said, if I don't understand it, I'm sure that no one will ever understand it. So what I'm trying, and what I was trying to tell you is that in fact, when you think about quantum theory, there are two possible stories to try and tell. One is the story that follows the way that Schrödinger has developed quantum mechanics, and the other is the story to try to follow the idea of Heisenberg when he tried to develop it. And my own feeling about the situation is that people immediately follow Schrödinger's story, because that story was very simple to understand, because it was becoming a story of these waves, and we could understand intuitively what waves mean. We were able to understand to explain the interference phenomena this way. And the most important thing, the Schrödinger approach allowed, by looking at the Schrödinger equation of motion for these waves, allowed people to solve very complicated problems that in the Heisenberg picture, nobody knew how to do mathematically. So poor Heisenberg was left alone. At the beginning when he developed, he was the beginner, because Schrödinger followed a few months later. When he started, then everybody was trying to solve the problems using the Heisenberg picture, and pretty soon they realized it's quite complicated mathematically. The minute you try to solve problems more complicated than harmonic oscillator or hydrogen atom, people found it very, very difficult to continue the procedure using the Heisenberg picture. And then came Schrödinger with his famous equation and the concept of wave describing quantum mechanics, particles by waves. And then people realized that it's so beautiful. First of all, they had now a very simple intuition of what's going on, so-called intuition. In the case of Heisenberg, these were these complicated methods that nobody could have any intuitive feeling what they mean. In the case of Schrödinger, you have a beautiful particle described now by wave. Everybody has experience of using Maxwell waves. So they say, we have now a beautiful way to think about quantum mechanics. And then they try to solve more and more complicated problems, more complicated atoms. And lo and behold, it became very easy, infinitely more easy than in the case of Heisenberg. So from there on, in fact, till today, I claim, till few days ago when I started to talk here, but till today, people think about quantum mechanics in the story of Schrödinger. So let us try to tell this story as well as we can and see what difficulties are left in the story. So we will try to describe as if we are Schrödinger trying to develop his story as much as best, even with the hindsight of what we know now about physics. So Schrödinger will say, first of all, well, I know that in classical physics we have a particle described by position and momentum, a point moving in space-time. I know now that this description cannot be true, and I have to describe physics in Hilbert space. So we accept the idea that it has to be described in Hilbert space. Hilbert space has infinite dimensions, so we have to know how to connect with the abstract notion of a vector in Hilbert space, how to connect as soon as possible that notion with things that we can observe. So what Treninger decided, we are talking as if, he decided to try to take this vector and expand it. That vector is a function of time, expand it as amplitude in representation, where the object that appears here is something that we are all familiar with. This object tells us that if the path is described by this object, we know where it is in space. So this is obviously the best way to expand the vector. We could expand this vector in many, many different ways by taking any complete set of eigenvectors, autonomous set, but Schrödinger decided to do that. So therefore, if we look at the dynamic equation, we want to write an equation which is h psi equal to ih psi dt. That is for any vector in Hilbert space. But using that representation, we will so write this equation, what it implies for the coefficient of this expansion. And very soon, we discovered that that thing will be very, very simple if the Hamiltonian. We will try to discuss now just a single particle, because all the essential new features can be understood just with the story of a single particle. So if H classically is equal to P square over 2m plus some potential V of X, then Schrödinger realized that if he want to write correctly the commutation relation between X and P, he can represent in this representation the momentum by the derivative with respect to position, and the position itself as a number. And then from this he could follow his famous Schrödinger equation. Of course, this wasn't the really historical way how it developed. The really historical way was that Schrödinger read the article of De Broglie, where De Broglie said the following: if classical electromagnetic theory, when we come to the quantum domain, reveals some particle properties that we now call photons, then De Broglie said, why not to assume the same about classical particles, that they have wave properties? I want us to make a very short digression here, and so that already here there is some real confusion. Because in the case of the electromagnetic theory, when we quantize it, the wave features can never be described at the same time as having just one photon or a definite number of photons, because the wave features are electric and magnetic fields, and those things don't commute with the number of photons. So to say that we have in the classical electromagnetic theory also descriptions of particles, we have to realize that these two descriptions are complementary. We can't think of a single photon having also the properties of electric and magnetic field, because if we try to measure that, immediately we create and destroy photons. So in the case of the electromagnetic theory, it's true that you have a theory that has wave features and has particle features, but they never live together. Now, what happened when they breached the boy? The boy said, I have a single quantum particle, but it must have also wave properties. So this is not saying something that we learned from electromagnetic theory, is saying something more, which is not true, because that will be eventually the reason why we have all this confusion. Because Schrödinger followed what De Broglie said, but he understood with that the meaning that we have a particle, and at the same time, this single particle has wave properties, which is wrong. Okay. This, you will see later that this really is the reason why the Schrödinger story is really inconsistent, and that's why we don't have a good intuition about quantum mechanics. That's for this problem. Anyhow, so Schrödinger said, in hindsight, we are not going to describe the historical thing. We are trying to tell now the Schrödinger story as best as we can. So Schrödinger would say, I need to understand what a vector in Hilbert space means, so I should better try to represent it in a representation that I intuitively understand what it means. And then in that representation, I have these amplitudes, which are functions now. And these functions, because they are Hamiltonians of this simple form, these functions behave like waves. Simple waves in three dimensions. And that's beautiful, because now we have intuition what's going on. We know how to handle waves. We understand now immediately why, in this case, if we look what happens when we do interference experiment on quantum particles, say the famous two-slit experiment, we now understand, since the particle is described by waves, the wave, even if we have just a single particle, that wave goes through the two-slit, we have interference, and that explains the main new feature of quantum mechanics for particles, that they also show interference properties. Yes?
Can you, can you repeat again the discrepancy or disagreement between de Broglie and
Schrödinger? That's important, so if it's not here, I'll explain it again. In the case of the electromagnetic theory, classical theory, when you add to it the quantum discovery that this electromagnetic wave is made out of lumps of energy, namely particle-like properties, then we say that this shows to us that in the case of classical fields, when we go to quantum mechanics, this classical field has also particle-like properties, right? So we have, on one hand, the classical notions of electric and magnetic field, if it's electromagnetic field, and on the other hand, we have the notion that the wave is described in lumps of energy and momentum that we call photons. But it's very important to realize that these two aspects of the electromagnetic field are complementary. We can't speak about the same time from having a definite number of particles, namely a definite number of photons, and definite electric and magnetic field. So we have on one hand, because the two things don't commute. You can see why they don't commute. If I have, for example, take just a single electromagnetic mode, definite number of photons means that we have definite energy. Definite electromagnetic field in this mode means that we have something that oscillates all the time. So the two features are not consistent. If you want to speak about the field aspect, the electric and magnetic field, you speak about a situation where you are not allowed to think of a definite number of particles. So therefore, to speak about a single photon having also wave properties is a mistake. Because the minute when I try to measure anything connected with wave properties, I will immediately destroy the photon or create more of them. So the notion that I have a single photon with waves is a mistake. Now with de Broglie, Clement said, okay, electromagnetic theory, I have both wave properties and classical properties. Then maybe when I try to understand what happens when I quantize classical particles, not classical waves, I will have now these classical particles have also wave properties. But at this point, he thought about a single particle having wave properties. This is not analogous to what happened in the electromagnetic case. And this is the main problem, as we will see when trying to describe, to talk about a consistent theory in the Schrödinger way to look at it. So it looks very happy situation. I have a single quantum particle moving in space, described by waves. These waves have exactly the property that de Broglie said, because the solution has a connection between the momentum and the wavelength and the energy and the frequency. Everything looks completely nice. And we can have very intuitive picture about it. And we know, say, if you look at the Davidson-Gemma experiment, where you send particles through crystals and you see electrons and you see all the interference patterns, everything looks nice. So what's the problem? Why do we find that this story is not satisfactory? And the experimental sociological fact is that you keep discovering, even 100 years later, you keep discovering new effects, new situations that everybody's puzzled when they're discovered. which could never happen in relativity, but in quantum mechanics happens again and again. I myself am even responsible for some of these situations where I have shown that there's something new in quantum mechanics, and first everybody was saying that couldn't be true even, and because we don't have the right intuition. So, what is really the problem about this story? The main problem is that when we speak about this wave in space, we think, what does it mean for a single electron that has a charge E and mass M? What does it mean to say that at this time that electron can be, for example, at two different locations? I have two different locations far away from each other, and I say there is something new about this quantum particle compared to classical electron, that in some sense it has existence in both places. And this existence is not due to our lack of knowledge. It's not a probability for it to be here and there, because then we will never be able to understand how this electron, when it comes to two slits, knows at the same time that both slits are open. This is a mystery. So it's not probability. It's something truly there that is shared by the two regions. And what is this thing that is there we don't have any intuition for? Because the only intuition that we can have are either that if it were a true wave, then a true wave that is spreading through places, you take all the properties of this wave and say they are part there and part there. So if this would have been really a physical wave, then we'll say in this situation half the charge is here and half the charge is here, half the mass is here, half the mass is there, and that's of course not the correct picture. So, because every time we look, we always find the whole mass and the whole charge lumped together. So we have therefore a problem. We have a problem. We have beautiful mathematics. We have beautiful ways to think about the mathematics. We have marvelous intuition about how to solve simple problems in a Schrödinger representation. And most people will be satisfied with that and say, okay, we understand. We have a good story about quantum mechanics. On the other hand, people that try to think deeply about it, like Feynman and other people, that are really honest and trying to understand what there is there, they come to the conclusion that they really don't understand what there is, and they have a message. The message is, don't try to think what it means. If you try to think what it means, you will run into a deep hole. So, this is as much as I want to say about the Schrödinger picture. It's very nice way to understand intuitively what happens in the mathematics, and very bad way to think about the correct story that is free of mathematics to think about it. I will say maybe one more point that to me is the best indication how wrong we can go when we try to follow the mathematics blindly, having very good intuition of the mathematics, but not being able to understand above it. Look what happens when people try to follow the mathematics of quantum mechanics to the end. They say the following, okay, we have this situation, new situation, where we have amplitude here and we have amplitude there. Let us try to understand what it means. How can it be that both of them exist together? So then they say, okay, let's look at the situation where from this thing, from these two amplitudes, we bring them to a photographic space, for example. We have now two macroscopic possibilities of in a photographic plate, either having a big macroscopic spot here or a big macroscopic spot here. We come and look now at this photographic plate. What happens? So one approach is to say when we look at it, we find all of it either here or here. Then this will be like probability. But come other people, starting with Everett and Wheeler, and now many people believe them. They say, look, we understand what's going on. When we look at the photographic plate, we ourselves go into two places in the same way as the electron. So we didn't understand what the electron does. Now we say the mathematics, which we understand, tells us that we look at it our brain goes to two different locations. Then if our brain goes to one location, we do one thing, goes to another memory, do another thing. Now suddenly, this sickness that was being at two different locations that we don't know what it means, the whole world is now, the whole macroscopic classical world is sick the same way. Because now we say, the mathematics tell us that we are at the same time at two different locations. We don't know when we are in one location that we are in the other, but the mathematics tells us we are in both locations. We will never be able to check it, but if we believe the mathematics, then there's a story. And then there is no problem. Now we understand mathematically what it means to be in two locations, because the mathematics tells us we really see both locations. But we will see them in a new way, that we also become spread into two locations, and then everything is fine. But this is mathematics. This is not physics. This is not intuition. Because intuition should give us two things. One, what does it mean to be for us to be at the same time at two different locations? We have no understanding of it. And also, it should give us some experimental way to test if this is true or not. And there is no experimental way in principle, again. Rev Weizmann, who believes in many ways, believes that maybe there will be some super technology at the end of the days, where you take a dead cat, this super technology will make it a live cat, and we'll be able to interfere the two. So we have to do it many, many times to see finally that indeed we have the two situations. I can prove, I believe, although I have not done it, but maybe I should do it, I can prove that in order to do this experiment, we have to collect so many macroscopic systems that will do this work of changing a dead cat to a live cat that I will run into a black hole much before. So I think that it will be even possible to prove that there cannot be any super technology even at the end. Now, I will ask my friend Lev, suppose I prove to you that you will never be able experimentally, in principle, to check if we are really at the same time in two different locations. Would you still believe the mathematics or no? These are questions I want you to ask. Suppose I'm able to prove to you there will never be a super technology. It's inconsistent. That will show that the interference thing. Suppose this is true. What will be your feeling then? That you still believe the mathematics, right?
Beautiful theory which explained my experience and answer.
No, you are not very. No, he doesn't. Okay, fine. So you agree. Therefore, okay, this proves my point. So here is the situation. So here is the situation. I have now mathematical theory that is beautiful, consistent. And it tells me the following story. It tells me, first of all, that an electron can be at the same time in two different locations. I don't understand what intuitive laws it means. I know that I can use this theory to calculate experiments later, but to ask what it means at this instance of time for the electron to be at two different locations, still keeping its electric and mass always together, not spread, is electric charge and the mass, then I am left with this misunderstanding what it means, and now comes the idea, actually, you in principle couldn't understand what it means. Why? Because when you come and look at the electron, you yourself are speaking to two, and these two don't know of each other, so there cannot be explanation. But it's fine because it's consistent. Everything is consistent. Mathematically, I can't find any problem with it. Intuitively, I think it's ugly. Other people don't think so. I think it's ugly because it's a story that I don't understand intuitively what it means. Okay, enough about Schrödinger's story. Now I want to see what happens if we try to follow Heisenberg's story about quantum mechanics. And here again, we find that we have a much better story, although mathematically it will look more complicated. But intuitively, we will find a story that is free of inconsistencies, and therefore I think that we have to think, when we want to think correctly about quantum mechanics, we have to do two things. We have to tell the Heisenberg story to understand what is going on intuitively, and we have the Schrödinger story as a mathematical aid to help Heidenberg to follow what happened in his story. So for me, the Schrödinger picture or the Schrödinger wave is something that has the same role as potentials in classical physics. We have electromagnetic vector potential and scalar potential that can help us to solve very nice physical problems in the canonical formalism, but we never would say that because of this, the potentials exist. It's a true physical property. So for me, the Schrödinger representation, as I will try to say, is just a beautiful mathematical way of solving what happened in the Heisenberg representation, and there we have a picture that we can understand intuitively. So what did Heisenberg do? Again, in hindsight, this is not how he discovered it, but in hindsight, we say, what Heisenberg can then say, okay, I have a vector in Hilbert space, how should I understand what this vector means? So he did not take the root of Schrödinger. He said, if I look at this vector and I remember the physical properties are described by Hermitian operators, I can ask what are all the properties of this vector by looking at a complete set of Hermitian operators that have the property that this vector is an eigenvector of. And I will call this the properties of this particle. The properties of this single particle are all the observables that I can measure without disturbing it. This will give me at least a picture of something that is consistent for a description of a single particle. This complete set of eigen operator is a very nice set. First of all, it satisfies the condition that the commutator of any two of them is necessarily, when applied to psi, is equal to zero. So I consider a much bigger set than just Hermitian operators commute. It's the set of all Hermitian operators whose commutator applied to psi is equal to zero. Let's just make this concrete by a very simple example. Suppose I have a finite Hilbert space, say in four dimensions, and this is the vector I want to describe. So I ask now, what is the complete set of Hermitian matrices that these are the observable in this space that leave this vector unchanged? And these are all the matrices that have answers here, zeros in the first line, zeros in the first row, and anything else. This is a complete set of Hermitian matrices, it's a vector set, it's a real vector set because I'm allowed to add two of them with real numbers. So I replace then, I have now a one-to-one mapping between the complex Hilbert space in n dimensions and the real new space, vector space in n squared dimensions, and the number of the subspace of all those that are definite are n minus 1 squared plus 1. And the nice thing about this set is that you can immediately check that I must have 0, 0, otherwise I will disturb this vector. The nice thing about this set is that the set uniquely defines a single vector. So I can define now a single vector by a set of observables that I'm allowed to measure in principle, without changing the vector, and they completely characterize what the vector is. That means that I can now, instead of having the Schrödinger equation, that is I h bar d psi dt is equal to h psi, I will now replace this by equations of motion for these vectors, for these Hermitian operators. Because if I can follow in time what happens to them, then I will know what happened to the vector, because there is one-to-one correspondence between them. So the Heisenberg picture is saying, instead of trying to understand what happened to the vector in the Hilbert space, I will try to understand what happened to the set of Hermitian operators, the observables, how they behave as a function of time, because the advantage here is that when we speak about each one of them, we know what it means. In principle, we can measure every Hermitian operator. In principle, as long as we keep the velocity of light infinite, there is no restriction. Then we can understand what it means for this seems to be definite because we can come and associate them with physical properties of individual particles. We can never associate the wave with single particles. We can associate this set of Hermitian operators with single particles. So we look now at the Heisenberg equation of motion, and we see that we have more complicated equations. So we say, okay, we know that we have to solve this, but we can instead look at what happens to the vector as a function of time. If we know what happens to the vector as a function of time, from this then we can calculate more easily what happens to this observer as a function of time. So from this point of view, this important thing is what to know what happens to this observable, but in order to solve it more easily, we use the Schrödinger picture. But from this point of view, the Schrödinger picture will be just a mathematical way that helps us to solve. Only 5 minutes? Give me 6, okay? Now, so, okay, now the highlight of this story. The highlight of this story is that we try to understand now this picture of having, in the Schrödinger picture, having a vector that is at the same time at 2 different locations, and that later, when evolving the time, we show how a single particle can interfere with itself. Let us see what Heisenberg tells us, story tells us about exactly about the same situation. So we start with this, and we say, well, we look for the set of all observables, or emission operators, for which these are eigenvectors. And we find very quickly a very interesting thing, that we can describe the set of operators for which this is eigenstate by looking. We know that every observable is some function of x and p. If we try to expand this function as polynomials x to the n, p to the n, we find that these polynomials are not rich enough to give us information about this thing. I think it's very, so it is so important that I will have intermission now, end up the story in the first part of the after intermission. Okay?
It's a bit a philosophical question. So it concerns the first part of your talk.
Yeah.
I don't think that intuition is a scientific notion. So what I understand about physics, and maybe I'm wrong.
No, we have an experimental evidence here. That feels very obviously that there's beautiful intuition about what happened here, right?
So what I understand is that what you want from a physical theory is that it will be the simplest set of assumptions or equations that gives you a description of all known experimental data, experimental results, and we'll be able to make predictions.
Yeah.
If I have this, then I'm happy. Whether this is a part of my intuition or I need to be brainwashed to develop a new intuition, this is secondary, and this is outside the scientific arena.
So you object to that. So you are satisfied that if I have a mathematical theory, I have intuition about the mathematical theory, and therefore I can immediately follow what's happening with this story, that you are satisfied with it, because you don't want to have any more feeling what the theory is trying to describe. Is that your idea?
No. I cannot say yes or no. I mean, there are many things in the world I'm not satisfied about. I mean, I like to have stable life. I want to have political events going on the right way and so on. So in general, I'm not satisfied.
Yeah.
the question is whether this I would call a good a good physical theory.
Okay, yes. So the only defense I have, because we can't argue anymore whether my intuition is better than yours, this is stupid. The only defense that I have is that we keep being surprised again and again by discovering features of the mathematics of quantum theory that we did not suspect. That means that really, really, we don't have even a good enough intuition about the mathematics, because we know we have intuition about simple situation with the mathematics, but we keep discovering new situations that we would not well able to guess before. And if we had the right story, like what I call the right story, we will not be surprised. In the case of relativity, we have a right story, and everybody say, come and tell us, look, I have two twins, one of them will go and come back, it's a different age. I will immediately say, hey, Einstein told us a very nice story. You look at somebody sitting in a glass cage, and you see a photon going back and forth, and suppose it's sufficiently long that when the photon comes back, it has beat. So each time the heartbeat, the photon comes there. You look at the same thing from a moving frame, what you see is the photon makes a bit resistance, and if the velocity of light is still the same, that means that the heartbeat might be slower. That explains it. This is intuition that tells you.
That's not intuition, that's a calculation.
No, but the calculation, the intuition is if the velocity of light is the same, that must follow. So, first of all, the story, you actually learn to tell the story as Einstein taught us by all these Dirac experiments, and then you can be in a situation where you're not surprised by this. That's the important thing. We keep getting surprised all the time by discovering features of quantum mechanics that we didn't think about before. This is experimental sociological effect. Everybody gets surprised again and again in quantum mechanics. Okay, so this must mean that we experimentally, that we don't have the right story yet. That might mean, but try to follow and see how with this approach, I'm able to come with new understanding that will be much nicer. So if you let me continue next hour, you will see that I'm led into a much better picture of quantum mechanics than this one. The intermission?
I agree perfectly that the Heisenberg representation is a far better way of thinking about quantum mechanics than the Schrödinger representation. But I mean, your other example is simply that a lot of people have been trained with very, very bad intuition. They haven't really looked at the mathematics of the theory. They've developed this intuition to try and stop themselves from thinking about the mathematics, even in cases in which that intuition just...
Okay, we have more of this in agreement, so
I'm
happy.
Really doesn't fit. All right.
One last quick question. Yeah. There's a quote from Bell, which is, tell me what's real in your theory. If the space vector is not real, tell me what is. Now, in the case...
Let me finish.
Lev has the state vector real, and he thereby deduces that there are all these worlds. Now, in the two-state formalism, the two states presumably are real, which case does it mean that the final state vector is a real portion, and in some sense, nature has already decided what the whole story is? Or what is the real structure?
Yeah, as you see, and we are introducing the two vectors, ask this question after I talk about it. Next session, okay?
Unfortunately, we'll be here the next session, so I want the answer. I want you to post-select the answer.
Okay. The answer is that, indeed, if you describe a quantum system fully, you have to describe it by using two boundary conditions, and the two boundary conditions have two sets of observables, and I have to learn to think about the two sets together. I can describe them also as two vectors in the Schrödinger picture, but there I'm led into some difficulty. So it's better to think about these two boundary conditions as two sets of permission observables that can be known to the particle, and you can deduce all the properties in between by thinking carefully about these two sets.
Applying this to the whole universe, but not just this simple experiments, does this essentially mean that the future is already here?
No, it's not only here. It's a beautiful thing that I will also describe this question, how I can have free will with the boundary conditions together, okay? I told you we are not going to meet, so it's okay for you.
Okay, let's thank Ikir again.